The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
All right. Well, it's another week where Sue Thomas is our panelist here for the Reardon Roundtable. And Greg Keller, how are you this afternoon, Greg? Wait, hang on a second. I think I got to turn the right mic on, and you're confusing me because you're in a different place. And we have new fancy mics and stuff. Oh, my God.
Here we go.
Just under the gun. Just under the gun. Jeff Smith makes it into the studio. Okay, if someone could help him grab a new mic, because I don't think Jeff's been here since we started with the new setup, because we have new fancy equipment in here and new monitors. Keller, let me talk to you first. How are you?
Great, Mark. It's been a great week to be a hyper-partisan Republican.
Well, yeah, I think you're right about that, and we're going to talk about it. Do me a favor with that microphone. I'm going to turn you down and kind of bend that up in a different direction. I know that sounds personal, but we're going to see if we can get everyone on the mic the right way. Hi, Jeff Smith. How are you?
Hey, pal. How are you?
Good to see you. We'll explore this a little bit later in the show, but I am curious, because you spent some time in New York and you're a baller. Are you a Knicks fan or not?
Not particularly.
Yeah.
No. I mean,
are you watching though?
Oh, of course.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, Brunson might be the most clutch player we've seen. You know,
well, that's pretty incredible.
Since Steph. I mean, and the great thing about Brunson for the basketball fans out there is
he's your height.
Well, yeah, he looks like he is.
He's taller than that.
Compared
he's
to Wemby.
6'2".
I think he's
6'2".
200 pounds.
Right,
you know,
right.
He's not little.
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about him, you know, for the basketball aficionados out there is he's not a pure shooter, okay? He's not the quickest guy. You know, usually the point guard is going to be super quick. So a lot of the kind of natural skills you associate with the star of an NBA team, he doesn't really have. He is just like, he wills the ball into the basket. I mean, he shoots these crazy off-balance shots. He doesn't really shoot the high percentage. You know, the game is so dominated by sabermetrics. They want you to only shoot from certain places on the floor. Almost no mid-range jump shots anymore. Mostly just like layups or dunks where you're going to get fouled or three-point shots. He violates almost all of the data analytics in the game.
Yeah, it's
and
an
he's
interesting
unbelievable.
Story. And I've said this before. I think it's pretty standard that if you're in an NHL town, you're probably not dialed into the NBA, and then vice versa. When I was in Milwaukee, I was, you know, very much into the NBA. They had good teams in the early 2000s. George Karl was the coach, and Glenn Robinson and Sam Cassell. So I don't pay a lot of attention. But Wembanyama is such an amazing story. I'm certainly watching this series. And did you guys watch the hockey game last night? Did anyone watch the hockey game?
No.
Okay, that was an amazing game last night. It really was. Vegas takes the lead 2-0. The Hurricanes tied. It goes back and forth in overtime. Carolina wins. The series is now tied 1-1. So you still have really good championship series in the NHL and in the NBA. And Jeff, the Knicks have won like 12 in a row. It's insane, right?
Totally insane.
All right.
I mean, I love watching Wemby though. And the Spurs are so young. I mean, they're starting something like 20 years old, 21. 22, 22, and 23, something like that. Don't quote me exactly, but I think they might be the youngest team to ever reach the finals. And, you know, I thought the Spurs were a slightly better, you know, team. I think they have a little bit more talent, but God, the Knicks
play
together.
Well, that was a big win the other night, for sure.
Yeah, but the Knicks play together so well.
Game two tonight. Let's get into politics. Greg, I'll let you start here. Before we get into winners, losers, whoever those might be in California, let's just talk about the process. I mean, and you know, I'm not a big stolen election person. I do think there's fraud out there, and I think we should certainly keep track of it. These rules they have in California are just outrageous. And I don't think I realized the depth of the nonsense until this week. But how can you have a country or a state in this country where you have on Wednesday morning 60% of the vote that's counted? By Thursday, it's 62%. I don't know. Maybe we're up to 65 at this point. It's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. The fact that in the year of our Lord, 2026, the state of California requires nearly a month and a half to tabulate the vote from their state is absolutely ridiculous. They will tell you that it's, oh, we want to get as much participation as we can. We want to make sure as many people can vote as possibly can. We want to make it as easy on everyone as we possibly can. Oh, well, great. So you guys are taking a month and a half to count for all those reasons. That must mean that you guys have far higher voter participation percentages than every other state. No, actually, California
pretty low.
Has lower voter participation than every other state. Here's what they're doing and here's why they're doing it. And we've talked about it on this show before. Whether it's bringing illegals into the country or nonsense voting tactics that they use, the modern Democrat Party, by virtue of the stances they take on the positions, can't win in a free and fair election. So they need to have 45-day vote counts. They need to flood our country with 15 million illegals in order to win. That's what this is all about. So don't believe them when they say, oh, we're just trying to make sure that as many people can vote as possible. No, what they're doing is they're quote-unquote curing ballots. What that means is it goes to someone who decides what the voter's intention was. That's why this takes so long. This is all part and parcel of the Democrat vote cheating machine. That's
okay,
all this is.
Let's say just for a moment that he might be a little hyperbolic there, but not completely. Okay, but Jeff, can you really defend
of what he
these
said
rules?
Was completely laughable.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is. Okay,
it's laughable how they count the votes in California.
No one's bringing illegals in to vote. The reason,
automatically disqualified for the rest of the roundtable from now until the end of time.
It's just such a ridiculous comment, and your whole talking point about like Democrats are trying. How can you guys say two things which are totally mutually exclusive? One of the reasons that I like coming on with you, Mark, is because you have become more consistent, I think, philosophically over the years, and honest about things, flaws on your side. It is totally mutually exclusive for people to say, as I have heard my friend Greg say over the last 2 years, that Republicans are now winning the Latino vote and are drawing Latinos. Hey, Latino men went towards Trump dramatically in 2024. And I know that I was on here with Sean Flower, the mayor of Eureka, and he talked all about like the future of the Republican Party was going to be winning the Latino vote after the 2024 election. You can't have your cake and eat it too. You can't say that, but then say out of the other side of your mouth, Democrats are importing Latinos to win elections. Either Republicans are doing better with them. That is not what's happening.
You guys have a real problem, and it's across your party and through the legacy media, of differentiating between legal citizens and illegal migrants. There's a difference.
And people who are not legal are not voting. You guys say this every election cycle, and then you can't prove it at all. The number of people who have been shown to not be citizens and have voted, you can count them on a few hands. Okay?
Like I said, it's
a great talking point for you guys. It's not true.
Okay, it doesn't happen. Let's talk about the fact that the Democrats in Washington, D.C. have spent the last 2 months opposing exactly this, opposing the idea that only citizens should be allowed to vote in U.S. elections. We did this in Missouri, in fact. We had a bill in Jefferson City for exactly this purpose, which was only U.S. citizens, only Missouri citizens shall be allowed to vote in Missouri elections. You know who went nuts about that? My good friend Jeff's party, because they want illegals voting in this country. We said, oh, the SAVE Act. Maybe you need to have a valid voter identification in order to vote. Who stopped that? My good friend Jeff's National Democrat Party. They said we're reinstituting Jim Crow, which of course is hilarious because it was my good friend Jeff's party who carried out Jim Crow.
Well, that's Smith, and now the people who did carry the former Democrats who did carry out Jim Crow became Republicans starting in 1964 when the big divide in national politics was LBJ supporting the Civil Rights Act and Barry Goldwater opposing it, which caused a mass migration of Southern white voters from the Democratic Party.
That's old information. The truth is that they left because of abortion, because the Democrat Party only cares about abortion.
Hang on. Jeff, seriously, though. Take the Hispanic. You think there's a double standard. Take that out. Do you really think, I'm asking this seriously, that the rules that they have in California for allowing you to vote on maybe Wednesday and still write in that you sent this on Tuesday is a good thing? And just outside of that, why should we have our biggest state in this country take a month to count votes in any election? That's really outrageous.
I try to be, despite the fact that I just recently gave up my BlackBerry, I do try to be tech forward. I do try to be tech forward when it comes to public policy. I think we take something like autonomous vehicles. I think it's ridiculous that our state isn't embracing autonomous vehicles. We know that based on Waymo's initial
data. Did I just ask about autonomous?
No, but it's going to get to the ballot.
Here we go.
But, you know, we need to be tech forward, whether it comes to saving preventing fatalities by having very safe autonomous vehicles that don't text and drive,
I think
that don't drink
thing.
And drive.
I saw Waymo yesterday on my way out of here.
The data is very good that it reduces accidents by about 90%. Let's embrace that. Let's do something similar when it comes to voting and really embrace technology. I agree with you. There's no reason, to paraphrase Greg, that in the year of our Lord 2026, it should take weeks and weeks for any state to tabulate the ballots. But it's not a blue state, red state thing. Red states and reddish states like Arizona and Pennsylvania also take weeks sometimes to tabulate their
elections. Well, I think it's outrageous. But look, we got other stuff to cover. Jeff Smith here, Greg Keller. Let's talk about what happened. Okay, now we don't know the results. What I've said consistently, and look, you have a friend who ran for mayor of San Francisco, Daniel Lurie, who kind of tapped into something that was happening out there. He's certainly no conservative, but
he's one of the most popular mayors in America right now.
Yes,
because he's governing without any regard to ideology. He's just saying, we got to clean up the city. There's no liberal or conservative way to do it.
Okay, so you've walked me into this point. Because look, when it comes to, and I don't think in the end Spencer Pratt's going to be mayor of L.A., but I also don't think it's ideological. Okay, this isn't MAGA stuff. This is stuff that's common sense. I think that in the end, Karen Bass probably wins. However, I think Steve Hilton has got a legit shot at becoming governor. And I know that, it's not likely for a Republican that would still be Becerra if he's the other guy that finishes too. But thoughts on that?
California's not going to elect a Republican governor right now.
Period. You think Steve Hilton.
I'll bet you my house.
Well, look, I
want to do that.
I don't want to do that because
okay,
what would I have
I'll
to put
give
up?
You two
if
to
I
one
just
odds.
Have to give you this studio that I don't own, yeah, then I'm there. I'm a realist too.
Yeah,
I don't think it's going
to
happen.
I'll give you 3-1 odds. I'll $100 versus $300. I'll give you $300 if Hilton wins.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay. Okay.
Really, so, you're going to be three? Oh, I'll take that.
Yeah, I'll give you 3-1 odds. I don't want to take advantage of you, but I think that's a fair bet. I don't see a way. In the political climate we're in, and admittedly, California gas prices are higher than anywhere else in the country for California-specific reasons, but not everyone in California thinks about it like that. They're going to look at what's going on in Iran and associate that with the price spike. In a place like Missouri, prices have spiked from $2.50 to $4.
But what if Steve Hilton just talks about California, not national issues?
I just think he focuses on California. But people see that, a lot of the issues are conflated. I think gas prices, people don't necessarily see that as a national issue.
You're probably right about
that. But when the president of the United States is in the 30s nationally, that's an albatross around the neck of Republican candidates everywhere.
For the most part, I think it is. Yeah, I think Hilton might be just a little different, though.
Yeah, gas prices in Missouri, to Jeff's point, are about $3.50, $4 a gallon, which we still have a ways to go before we hit Joe Biden-style levels on that. I mean, under Joe Biden, it hit better than 5%. I would take issue with something that Jeff said earlier, which is that this is about nonpartisan, non-ideological stuff. Actually, good governance is an ideological issue in that the only people who successfully run governments happen to be Republicans. Jeff and them have to constantly talk about this Lurie guy because he is the one and only Democrat major city mayor who is governing like a conservative Republican. So this is very much ideological. Look at any other major city in the United States run by Democrats, and yes, competence is now an ideological issue because Democrats cannot do it. Democrats cannot govern. We see this in cities across the country.
It would certainly be news to Daniel, one of my best friends.
Text him now.
For the last 26 years. That he's governing like a conservative.
Does he like cops? Does he like cops? Because that's partisan Republican.
Would it be more fair to say that he is not governing like a wacko progressive?
He's governing without regard to ideology.
Wrong.
And it's that simple. Yeah. I mean, like, if you say wrong about it, Greg, how would you explain the fact that he is trying to make sure that there's a treatment bed for any homeless person on the city who has a drug issue? That's not something that a lot of conservative Republicans talk about doing.
They say
get them off the streets.
That very much is.
He's taken a very much a middle ground in his election for mayor. There were people on his right saying basically, get him on a bus and take him out of the city immediately, all of them. There were people on his left saying, this isn't really that big of a problem and we have to be compassionate. He took the middle ground, which is to say, look, you're not going to be living on the street doing drugs. We're not going to have an open-air drug market in the city. We want to be compassionate about it in the way that San Franciscans are, but we're not going to tolerate this behavior.
You made
anymore.
My point. That's exactly what Democrat mayors do in every other major city in America.
Hang tight. We're coming back with more. It's a Rear and Roundtable. Greg Keller, Jeff Smith.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A-plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Reardon Roundtable. We're coming off a break here where, again, I've said this for years, where, you know, someone should come in and just sponsor the breaks, and then we show this on the YouTube channel what happens in between the commercials, because sometimes that can be very, very entertaining. Jeff Smith, former state senator, is here. GOP consultant Greg Keller as well. We got to keep talking about candidates with flaws here, Greg. And let me ask you about Graham Plattner, because I don't really understand how the Democrats can't distance themselves from this guy. I did hear a little hesitation from AOC yesterday saying, I haven't seen the latest. But the Oppo folder is being opened nearly every day. Bernie Sanders and Chuck Schumer don't seem to be wavering. But I've said multiple times, even this week, I feel like I'm missing something. Why is this guy still hanging in this race in Maine?
Yeah, they are starting to waver. I think you see a pretty clear cleavage amongst Democrats of the hardest of the hardcore, you know, the Bernies and the Ro Khannas and the people like that, you know, refusing at this point to completely 100% distance themselves from him. But from most other Democrats, particularly female Democrats that I have seen, professionals that I have seen on TV, on radio, on Twitter and elsewhere, they are starting to leave this guy. The shoe that has not dropped is that they pulled some major punches, believe it or not, in that New York Times piece that hit. I am very close with some Republican operatives in and around Maine who are involved in this race. They have told me that there are much more serious allegations yet to come out.
One of the women that was cited in there actually wrote a really long screed on X talking about some of the charges more specifically than they had in the New York Times.
It's going to get significantly, the story's going to get significantly worse, and it's going to get worse politically for Democrats, because I researched this a little bit a week or so ago, and Jeff maybe could correct me on this.
Right.
I believe the only, he is going to win the primary.
And he can't get off the ballot.
And he is going to win the primary. I mean, he is going to beat Janet Mills.
She's still on the ballot, but she suspended her campaign, right?
That's right. That's
the official line.
That's right.
There are seemingly some people that are still encouraging voters in Maine to choose Janet Mills so Plattner doesn't advance. Well, how do you explain him? I mean, really?
I would say the same thing to Maine voters that I said 9 months ago when his Nazi tattoo first emerged, or whenever that was, which is vote for the person who's vetted, who is competent. And yeah, I'd prefer a younger candidate than Janet Mills, too. But we got a blue state where and the incumbent is under 40%, and all we need is generic Democrat to win in that kind of circumstance. And now we've done the exact opposite of that, which we've got the most polarizing person right now in America, maybe outside of Ken Paxton in Texas. And but we've got a guy with a ton of baggage, and we made a big mistake 9 months ago in not vetting him. And I think, to Greg's point, because I think Greg's right about this, I don't think the last shoe has dropped. And the reason why is because what you're seeing right now is mostly a function of Democrats who did the research on him.
Not
any
Susan
bad
Collins
stuff
campaign.
That Republicans have, if they're smart, which they are, they're going to hold it back until the very minute that the ink is dry on the Secretary of State declaring the results of the primary done and Plattner is the nominee. That's when all the Republican oppo is going to drop. So I think it's going to get worse. And I don't think that we as a party should be condoning this. And we tried early on, Schumer tried, but I think it was a mistake for Schumer to take him around Capitol Hill last week.
I'll call it right now. Mark it down if you like. Susan Collins is going to be reelected.
Most of the people in Maine think that.
Susan Collins is not the best politician in America. Susan Collins, however, has a better feel for her voting electorate than probably anyone in office in the country today, with the possible exception of Donald Trump.
I think that's
very true. She was down in the polls going into her last race by 9 points. She ended up winning by 14. She is a mighty, mighty electoral woman in that state.
By the way, do you guys have headphones over there or not? Did we give you headphones? I just wanted to hear this here. I'll turn the mics off so you can hear it, because this was a little history today for Susan Collins, even Chuck Schumer heaping praise. Listen to this.
10,000 consecutive votes here in the United States Senate For nearly 30 years, Susan Collins has shown up for Mainers, has ensured that they are represented in every single vote.
This is truly a remarkable milestone. Many of us try hard to make every vote. Senator Collins has actually done it 10,000 times in a row.
I don't care what side you're on. That's really incredible. You know, 10,000 votes. She
has. Was it Lou Gehrig who had that insane record in baseball for most consecutive games played before Cal Ripken beat him? Who was that?
I don't know, but I was thinking Cal Ripken for sure. That's what it sounds like.
That's
right?
Who he beat, yeah.
I think he had like 2,131 games or something.
No one
like
was
that.
Ever going to beat that consecutive record. Yeah, that's what this is.
Look, I think you see a good portrait of, you know, frankly, Democrats acting in a very classy way. You see Dick Durbin, you saw Chuck Schumer, you saw Angus King, her colleague from Maine, all standing up and saying things that, hey, if Republicans are smart, maybe they'll put this in ads for Susan Collins this year. But all of them saying, you are the embodiment of the kind of work ethic and diligence that we're proud of in this institution. So good for her for showing up for all the votes, but not good for, you know, I think accountability for this president if Republicans hold on to the Senate.
Jeff Smith, Greg Keller here. Let me, Jeff took a little shot at you and I heard it and I know why he took the shot, because you've done work in Texas for Ken Paxton and the PAC. Ken Paxton, I've had to admit this, he's not exactly an unfought candidate, Greg. I mean, he's got some baggage too. And it's difficult for me because I try to be consistent on this stuff. Look, I think Graham Plattner is dangerous and disgusting in different ways. But it's not like we have the entire moral high ground down in Texas, do we?
Ken Paxton is a political juggernaut. This is a guy who has been through the fire, who has won election after election after election, who Texans like, who Texans trust. We beat John Cornyn by 27 points in the runoff. If you are a Republican political operative and you are looking at the wider U.S. Senate map, you are licking your chops right now. In Texas, we're running against a guy who is running on an all-vegan campaign, who has said and believes that, quote-unquote, God is non-binary. In Maine, we have this certified crazy person, Plattner, who beats women and says he wants to rape men, although not in a sexual way. That's Maine. In Michigan, the UAW just endorsed a guy named El Sayed, who is vitriolically against all Jewish
don't
people
forget
and
congressional
wants to see them erased from the face of the earth.
Congress 12 in New Jersey.
And what you see right now is there were some major polls out this week, Harvard out this week, showing Democrats with just a one-point advantage in the generic ballot. That's an A-rated pollster. After that, you saw another poll from Emerson, another A-rated pollster, Republicans within 2 points of Democrats. You see what's happening in California. You see these disastrous Senate candidates that they are in the process of nominating all over the country. I think we're going to look back on Election Day as this week, as the fulcrum point of when things started turning around. And, oh, yeah, by the way, did you guys see the jobs numbers that for May that came out?
The jobs numbers were good today.
Jobs numbers were supposed to be 80,000 new jobs created during the month of May. It was 172,000 new jobs created under President Trump because of his policies, more than double the expectation. This thing is going to turn around.
Let's let Jeff respond here. I want to hear what the response is.
So, well, first, I'm not going to.
You don't think Tallarico has a chance,
dignify
do you?
The ridiculous comment about he's running an all vegan campaign. That was from comment from years ago, which of course
God is non-binary.
He's got some comments which are certainly not ideal. And Paxton's first ad out of the gate was good. But I will say Greg is right that Republican political operatives are licking their chops. He's wrong about the reason for it. The reason they're licking their chops, especially in Texas, is because Republicans are going to have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars on this guy that they wouldn't have had to spend if Cornyn was the nominee. And so if I were a Republican political operative like my good friend Greg, who stands to benefit from some percentage of that spending, I would be licking my chops too. If they had nominated someone else, Texas would not even be on the general election map. Now it is. I don't think it's a toss-up. I think Paxton probably has a slight edge just because of the Republican lean of the state. But I think because they nominated him and because we didn't nominate Crockett, we nominated Tallarico, who I think isn't the perfect candidate, but is better than Crockett would have been. They're going to have to spend hundreds of millions of dollars down there.
Bar's kind of low there with Jasmine Crockett.
Yeah,
but,
I mean,
but he's not wrong about the
I know
money.
She's your favorite MICDS grad, isn't she?
Yeah, exactly. Go Rams. Go Rams. Jasmine Crockett, you know. the polling, for what it's worth, the polling all showed that Texas was always going to be an expensive race, whether it was John Cornyn or Ken Paxton. The difference is that Ken Paxton actually unites the right, unites conservatives and the Republican Party. John Cornyn was going to get into that general election, and none of the conservative voters of Texas were going to show up.
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together, we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's a Friday Reardon Roundtable. Sue will have Sue's News, of course, on a Friday in the next hour. Paul Hall with some entertainment recommendations. A lot of sports to talk about. It looks like Thomas Sajesi was sent down today to clear a spot for Lars Nootbaar, who is coming off his injury. And I don't know that he's in the lineup tonight, but they have cleared a roster spot. So that's a little breaking Cardinals news. Jeff Smith, former state senator, GOP consultant Greg Keller on the panel here this afternoon. Greg, let me start with this. And I think you've done some work on this campaign. The income tax ballot issue is going to be voted upon unless a court removes that in August. And look, I had the governor on earlier this week. I want to support this. I have supported this. I'm hearing from a lot of people, and I'm talking about conservatives and people who are older conservatives that don't like this, and they feel like it's going to add to their tax burden. I've done the math, and you and I have talked about this. I don't think it's mathematically possible for me to pay more in sales taxes than I do in Missouri income tax. But a lot of people do not like this plan. They think Republicans put the cart before the horse, and I don't think it's going to pass, and I actually don't think it's going to be close.
I think it's going to pass, and I don't think it's going to be particularly close.
Come on,
man. This is going to be a great deal for Missouri seniors. Missouri seniors, every single time they take money out of their retirement, they get taxed on that. That will no longer be the case. If you look at what is the number one asset that Missouri seniors own, it's their home. Well, if you're in a no-income tax state, the value of your home goes up between 20 and 55% more every single year. So if you want to see the value of your home as a Missouri senior, your number one asset, go up faster
Why is that? That sounds like a big number, by the way. 55%.
Okay, so if a St. Louis home on average goes up 3% per year in value, then the same home in Tennessee would go up 4% in value, which is a 33% increase. If you want to see your home values
go up. What's the correlation to the income tax? I am confused.
Because
on
people
that.
Are moving into those states. People want to live in those states. There is more demand to live in those states. Also, if you're a senior and you want to actually have your grandkids around when you're a little bit younger, you guys know we have two kids in college. Do they go to school in Missouri? No, they go to school in Texas. Why? Again, because that's where the money, that's where the jobs, that's where the employers are. This is going to be a great deal for seniors. I have seen very good numbers. I am confident we are on our way to winning this thing. It's going to be a great deal for Missourians. Everyone's going to benefit from it.
Mr. Jeff Smith.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not a vehement opponent of it, but I agree with you that I think it's going to go down. I think the conservative base is split on it. I see Facebook posts from throughout rural Missouri.
I know, I'm rather shocked. I do too.
From kind of Eagle affiliated groups that are strongly opposed to it. And that surprised me a little bit. So I'm not spinning against it. I'm not working for it or against it. But I would be very concerned if I were working for it. I would also say that all the comparisons to Tennessee and like automatically if we do this, people will want to come. We don't have Nashville. You know, we have, Branson, which is fine. The lake, which is nice. We don't have anything comparable to what they had. And they benefit from a 30-year kind of trend of country music going from being a niche, kind of a niche phenomenon to a mainstream thing that has been just a massive economic boon for that state. So I think extrapolating from that to saying that automatically how home values are going to go up 33%, I think that's getting the cart before the horse, to paraphrase what you said.
Why wouldn't, because one of the things that people do cite is and there are going to be carve-outs, and the governor even made it, he repeated this, and he said this in his State of the State, that medical services, real estate, off the table. The realtors are still acting like they're not off the table, but he has said they're off the table. They don't trust him, I guess. But why wouldn't you proactively do the carve-outs, make it clear to everyone, and then go to the ballot? And by the way, the legislature could pass this stuff on their own if they wanted to also.
We just started doing that. We had our first commercial out of the gates today, or yesterday, actually. I think another interesting thing that we did that hasn't hit the news wires yet, and maybe people aren't watching it that closely, is we are now messaging for phasing out the Missouri state income tax directly to every single realtor in the state of Missouri. And what we are telling them is that they are going to lose money because their trade group, the Missouri Association of Realtors, in opposing this, is going to hamstring their own individual members and make sure that their members are not making as much money as they otherwise would. If you're a realtor making $100,000 a year, you would get $5,000 a year by having no state income tax. And then again, to my earlier point, when real estate values end up going up, as they have in every single state that doesn't have an income tax faster than states like Missouri that do, you would see more money as a realtor because you would make that much more money as the percentage of your sales. If I am a Missouri realtor, I would be furious right now with the Missouri Association of Realtors because they are selling out their members.
I'm a little confused as how they're going so hard against it, given the fact that they're not going to be affected. I mean, I guess it's a trust issue, right? They don't trust the legislature.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I can't speak for the realtors, but I did find it, you know, pretty interesting to see them respond to the $1.9 million donation in support of the effort to immediately give $1.9 million and $1 against, which I think is their way of saying, however much money you put in for it, we've got as big of a pockets as you guys do.
They don't.
And so we'll see how it plays out.
But this is a mad dash at this point. I mean, this is only less than two months away for people to vote on this, right?
Yeah, and we already have mail hitting mailboxes. We already have television commercials that are up and running that have been, you know, focus group that have been run through pollsters. We've already seen what effect those messages are most likely to have. We are several steps ahead of the people who want to keep our taxes in 1960s era.
Maybe I should make a wager with Keller like I did with you.
I was just going to suggest that.
Let's do it.
Do you want to do it? Or you want me to do it?
You do it.
Okay.
Yeah, you're smarter.
Wait,
at this
maybe
stuff
I'll do
then.
a co-wager with you. Propose something.
Okay. Well, why don't we just go even odds?
Okay.
And you put up 200, and we each put up 100.
Done.
Okay. That's fair.
Okay.
I like that.
And then me and you have 3-1.
I'm already $300 richer today. This is awesome.
Wait. So am I doing your bet as well?
No. Okay.
No,
and then
I'm not asking you to.
And then
gave me 3-1.
And then the California governor,
right,
is just me against you.
Yeah.
Do you want to get in on that?
No, I like your side of that bet.
Okay.
You think the Democrats are going to win no matter what?
Yes.
Okay. Damn it, Keller.
Is this? We're not breaking any laws right now in Missouri, are we?
Yeah, if we are.
I'm not going back to prison for you, Mark.
We're finding out soon enough.
Ethan is telling me that Lars Nukvar will lead off tonight. J.J. Weatherholt is out of the game for the second time this week. Some lower body soreness. I'm not sure if that's good news, but we'll keep you posted on that as we move throughout the afternoon. Frank Cusimano is going to join us about an hour from now, kind of previewing sports for the weekend. Former State Senator Jeff Smith is here along with GOP consultant Greg Keller. Jeff, I'll start with you on Dr. Jill's book. And you know, some of this audio leaked because they were promoting the CBS Sunday morning interview. She's done a couple other interviews since then. She was on The View. She sat down with Craig Melvin. Craig Melvin on the Today Show actually asked her some tougher questions. But she's trying to make us believe that the only time she ever saw, you know, Sleepy Joe mentally deficient was the night of the debate when she thought he had a stroke. Now, come on. Some of this that she's trying to spin here in an effort to sell this book is just not plausible whatsoever. And I think we all kind of know that at this point. So what's going on here? And by the way, did you see the awkward moment where Joe was at the event too? And he kind of sauntered up to the stage and asked her a question at the library. That was weird. Did you buy the book, Jeff? Is it on your list?
Did not buy the book. Please call me Dr. Jeff, though.
Thank you. Okay, that's true, right? It is true.
Yeah, so just a couple things. First of all, if you don't mind, I know it's probably annoying when I do this, but I just want to correct one thing, or maybe not correct, but clarify about income taxes. The two states in this country that have seen the fastest growing property values in the last decade are Idaho and Utah, both of which have a state income tax around 5%, which is about what ours are. So I don't think there's an ironclad correlation.
Both of whom are benefiting from California being a total basket case.
So second of all, you asked about Dr. Jill here.
I did.
I think people just are ready for her to go away. I think people are ready for the Bidens to go away. Although Hunter's great on Twitter. So I think we're ready.
Hardest thing about running for president.
I think we should pass the mantle down and just, you know, it totally undermines her credibility to have gotten out there the night of that debate and said, Joe did a fantastic job. He answered all the questions. You know, either you're lying now or you were lying then. And there's no squaring this circle. So if I were her, I wouldn't have done this. I think that we, I said in November 2022, he has had a good first 2 years.
No, you were early in. I know he's doing okay,
and he should do one term. And I wish that he would have done so. I think our country would be in a much better place.
Greg, I actually gave Dr. Jill a little grace on the night of the debate because it is your spouse. And, you know, the human reality is she's not going to just rip her husband after the debate. But it's what happened after that. And I think that, you know, she and the rest of the family really did him a disservice.
I've been saying for several years now that Dr. Jill Biden is one of history's great monsters, and I feel somewhat vindicated by her releasing this ridiculous book at this time and doing so. I think the future revelations that are going to come out are the extent to which Jill Biden was really the power behind the throne all along. That Joe Biden was senile when he was elected, that everyone knew it, primarily and especially our friends over on the Democrat side, who lied and covered for him for the entirety of his 4 years. It was a totally shameful episode. But I think she was totally in control of the White House. What we're starting to see is that was the case. I think she is going to go down in history in infamy, and she never... We talked earlier about some of the headwinds that the Democrat Party is now facing and what should be an easy electoral layup for them this year. These horrendous candidates that they are nominating nationwide, the poll numbers coming back in the direction of Republicans. Democrats can't get elections counted in California in a month and a half. They're starting to face some serious headwinds. And the last thing they need is this tell-all book from Dr. Jill Biden. The timing couldn't be worse.
But I think Jeff's right. I think a lot of Democrats, and a lot of this was done, you know, anonymously, but there was reporting from Alex Thompson and others that a lot of Democrat players are like, enough is enough, move on, and they think it's ridiculous too.
I mean, that's right. I mean, I think Democrats are all traumatized by the 3 weeks after that debate where Jill Biden and Hunter and Mike Donilon and others in the White House tried to circle the wagons and keep him as the nominee until that just became untenable. We don't want to go through anything like that ever again. One more thing, just a quick clarification about something we were talking about earlier. Just got a text from the mayor of San Francisco giving him the argument that was made that he was governing like a conservative
Republican.
What did
Daniel say?
He said, "That's hysterical. I just raised the pride flag over City Hall." So not quite the conservative Republican.
That was a nice
approach.
Try, though, Keller. How much, Jeff, are you going to miss Scott Pelley on 60 Minutes? Because I'm not going to miss him at all. And I used to love 60 Minutes. And, you know, even back when Mike Wallace was doing the show, I'm not going to argue that Mike Wallace was an ideological conservative. But Mike Wallace would ask tough questions of both sides and people on both sides. And that's one of the things that's been missing from 60 Minutes. So I give Barry Weiss a lot of credit for going in and trying to change the dynamic. And Scott Pelley has to be one of the most arrogant, you know, legacy media people on the planet. He knew what was going to happen. I'm sure he wanted to be a martyr. He, you know, steps out at this meeting and insults the new executive producer. He does so in a very, very insubordinate way, and he gets handed his papers, and now I guess he gets a podcast. Now, there was news today that Bill Whitaker and Leslie Stahl and some dude I've never heard of decided to stay.
They all decided to stay.
Yeah, no one's heard of
it. They all said, look, we're really troubled by some of the things that we've seen, too.
Uh-huh.
We're going to stay for now.
Yeah, here's the problem with that. Bill Whitaker should be shown the door immediately because he's the idiot that did the story on Kim Gardner in St. Louis. I don't trust him whatsoever. I kind of like Leslie Stahl a little bit over the years. I know she's biased, but I think she's done okay. And honestly, God, the third guy, I never heard of him.
Speaking of Kim Gardner, we just hit the third anniversary of
Gabe Gore was in here yesterday.
Being the prosecutor.
Nice pivot there, by the way.
I think that. You know, I think that circuit attorneys are a little bit like refs in NBA basketball or Major League umpires. If you've never heard of them or you're not reading about them, they're probably doing a decent job.
I literally said that to him yesterday.
Are you serious?
I said, because I know you're doing a good job because we're not talking about you. I swear to God, I said that yesterday. So he was impressive, and I like the way that, you know, he's turned around that office for sure. But I was talking about 60 Minutes and CBS News, Greg, and, you know, they're in a tailspin right now. I don't know what's going to happen. It was interesting that, you know, those three did come forward and say we're going to stick with it.
And if you read the way that Scott Pelley went about this, you know, rather than having a conversation with the new management for 60 Minutes, by the way, who Pelley tries to talk about as some sort of crazy right-wing ideologue, the dude came from the New York Times most recently. And Scott Pelley could have had an offline conversation with him and said, listen, I have some concerns about the direction that this place is going under Barry Weiss. Let's talk about it. He decided not to do that. He decided to grandstand.
They invited him to dinner.
Yeah,
let's go out and let's talk.
Yeah, and he refused to do so. All he was interested in doing was giving this super woke, crazy commie speech in front of all the 60 Minutes staff and embarrassing the new boss. They did exactly what they needed to do, which is fire this has-been.
But, you know, the allegation, the thing that really, gets me is this allegation from some that Barry Weiss and Nick Bilton and these guys are somehow MAGA folks. I mean, there's nothing in reality, connection to reality to that at all. I mean, I subscribe to the Free Press. I've done it almost since the beginning. And they're critical of Trump when they need to be critical of Trump. And she is a lesbian liberal that left the New York Times because she was horrified by the journalistic malpractice. And she's trying to do something. And this is what I keep trying to say to people. We're not trying to turn 60 Minutes or, you know, other shows like this into conservative meccas for the media. We're just looking for fairness, and for some fairness.
And in fairness, 60 Minutes has become insufferable with its political bias in the last 10 years. I used to watch it happily. It used to be absolutely something we watched in our household every single week at that time. And then you turn it on and it's all climate change.
But you know what? This is the other thing about some of the complaints. Barry hasn't been there that long. You guys know this because you're in media. These stories take a long time to produce. Like a lot of the stuff was filmed last
year.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. But there's a big difference in my opinion, because I've been watching it still, in the political type reporting that they do and some of the feature reporting. And by the way, I think it was Scott Pelley that did this amazing story from a couple of months ago where he took you into the caves somewhere in, I can't remember if it was in Vietnam or something like that. And it was visually dazzling. He didn't touch politics at all. It was a good report. I gave credit where credit is due. But they veered off when it comes to the rest of it. And they don't have, Jeff, this is my concern, I don't think they have an understanding of why the American people don't trust them anymore. And I don't think we ever get that back. I think, you know, people are too divided. So it's not going to happen. Jeff Smith, thanks for coming in, though. I appreciate that. Good to see you. We need to write our wagers down, because two things about that. I don't usually pay my bets off. And then, but I also don't remember things. Sue, stop it. You shouldn't have support for that. I'll notch them in my little Wash U book here, well, Dr. Jeff.
I'll and tell then you, we'll, as a proud Jew, if you owe me money, I'm coming to get it.
I don't blame you at all.
We're 100 to 300. I'm giving you 3-1 odds on California governor, and me and Greg are
straight up.
Are straight up, and you and Greg are straight up on the income tax.
Exactly. For 100.
For 100. 100 each.
And any laws that we've broken today, we will disavow this completely. Good to see you guys. Keller, thanks for coming in. Appreciate it.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast.
Reality Gaze, let's love.